Welcome to the ROTC Scholarship Podcast, hosted by former Army ROTC Professor of Military Science, Lieutenant Colonel Retired Rob Kirkland. In these episodes, we explore how to best prepare yourself to obtain one of these valuable scholarships for those applicants who wish to attend a college or university and become officers in the military. The application process can be complex and confusing. This podcast works to make it more understandable. And now, the ROTC Scholarship Podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Lieutenant Colonel Rob Kirkland, and it's great to have you here today with ROTC Scholarship Podcast. Really happy here today to talk about the ROTC fitness test and what's all involved in order to do your best to get the highest score you can on it to help you, of course, get a ROTC scholarship, but also succeed in your future role as a cadet or midshipman and as a future officer in the United States military. You know, I can't really think of anybody better to invite on today's podcast than Stu Smith, who's really been doing this for years now. And I just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of background on Stu before, you know, we start here. Stu graduated from the United States Naval Academy in 1991. So Stu was a freshman at the Naval Academy when I was a senior at West Point. So we overlapped maybe a year while we were there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you...
We saw at least one Army-Navy game together.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Did you win in the last year that your freshman year or your, I guess your, we call it plebe year. I forget what you guys call it down there at Naval Academy.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I forget. That was a long time ago. Yeah, long, long time ago. Okay, so then after 8 years in SEAL teams as an instructor at the Naval Academy Physical Education Department, Stu resigned his commission in 1999 to start his own fitness and freelance writing business. Now he writes articles, books, programs specifically designed for candidates of just about every military branch, special ops unit, and police and firefighter agencies. He has a website. It's called stusmithfitness.com. Highly recommend it. Got a tremendous amount of resources on that. One other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Stu, was that Stu is the personal trainer to the heroes of tomorrow. He assists future heroes to train for any physical fitness test and follow-on selection in the military and law enforcement agencies. He's actively involved with the Naval Academy admissions recruiting programs and performs a military-style workout with over 2,800 midshipman candidates annually at the Naval Academy Summer Seminar Program. I could tell you with the Summer Seminar Program, there's just a number of ROTC candidates that I've worked with in the past that have done Naval Academy Summer Seminar and have great things to say about that program. So annually, he trains more than 5,000 candidates for free through his Heroes of Tomorrow program. So, you know, you can see from that resume, we have a person on here today who knows what the heck they're talking about. So, Stu, it's great to have you here today on the ROTC Scholarship Podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be on. Happy to chat.
Well, great. Well, other than what I mentioned in the bio, anything more you'd like to just a chat about, you know, before we get into some of the questions specifically about the test?
No, I guess the biggest thing is, you know, when I started writing and working out and writing about it, basically, it was military, law enforcement, firefighter style training programs. And that has evolved over the years into a new genre of fitness called tactical fitness. And it kind of encapsulates all of those groups. And the one thing I like to do is teach people about the three phases of tactical fitness. And your audience will appreciate phase one, because phase one is all about getting to the training. So that typically means you need to specifically focus on a fitness test, especially if it's a competitive program that a lot of people apply for, but not everybody gets it. Your PT scores are very important. So to get to the training, you have to pass a test. And we'll talk a lot about those individual tests in a minute. And then phase two is getting through the training. you might have spent a lot of time focusing on getting to the training, but then you got to focus on getting through the training and whatever specific program that is. They'll have different tests, they'll have different events, you know, whether that's a boot camp, a academy, plebe summer, a selection, you know, special ops selection program. All of those are different programs that your preparation matters significantly, and especially if it's a high attrition rate program. And then lastly, phase three is your active duty training programming, where you're focused on job performance, just maintaining all of your skills, as well as stress mitigation. So you really have to break down this genre of fitness into three phases. And we're going to focus really on phase one with this group, you know, people who are trying to get into a program that is rather competitive.
Yeah, Stu, and I would say there's, looking at all of your books and everything, I would say there's even the fourth phase for us old guys, right?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't even want to talk about phase four because this is so far off your audience's radar. Right. You know, 20, 30 years from now is an eternity. You know, but yeah, it's a blink of an eye when you're looking back.
Yeah. Well, we've got some parents listening in, so maybe they might be interested too. But yeah, but I know that you've done a lot also on, you know, kind of fitness over 40, and which is, you know, obviously something I think that's important for our society in general.
Oh, absolutely. Just healthcare costs alone.
Yep. So, well, great. Well, then let's roll into this kind of phase one that we talk about here. That's, you know, preparation, you know, that's kind of the start of this fitness journey for the candidates that are listening in on this program and their parents. So can you briefly review for us the fitness test events that are given for each of the services ROTC scholarship programs?
Yes. Typically, you're going to have, and they're going to vary just a little bit. They're all very similar. Let me just say there's a couple of different things that the candidate needs to do. One, they need to specifically train for that test that they are preparing for. And they may do multiple branches. You know, a lot of people like to try for an ROTC scholarship or an Air Force scholarship, or maybe they're applying to the Naval Academy and the West Point or the Air Force Academy. So they're all different. Typically, the ROTC program, however, is right now a push-up, sit-up, and a mile run. That is a typical test. However, as you get closer to, or I should say, once you're accepted into that, it's going to change immediately into push-ups, sit-ups, and a two-mile run for the Army, push-ups, sit-ups, or crunches, mile and a half run for the Air Force and the Navy. However, those are also changing too. 2020 is like the year of change because the Navy has taken out crunches and replaced it with the plank pose. So to max out a plank pose, you have to do it for 4 minutes. That's, you know, it's pretty hard to do if you don't practice plank pose. But I will say this, anytime you're doing sit-ups, you should be balancing out your core system by doing some plank poses anyway, because if you're just doing crunches, you're leaving your lower back, you know, weak, especially if you're not lifting weights and things like that to balance out the core musculature. But yeah, typically the ROTC candidate is going to do some form of push-ups, sit-ups, a mile to a mile and a half run. I think the Marine Corps is a mile and a half. But once they're in the Marine Corps, it's a 3 mile run. So you can't just stop at a mile and a half. You got to be able to do a 3 mile run. And then you have to add pull-ups in Marine Corps. So there's so many different, put it this way, there's nothing that's the same anywhere. There may be similar, but there's nothing that's the same. And you really have to understand the to and through process and prepare specifically to get to the training. That may take several weeks or even several months, depending on your fitness level. And then you need to start transitioning, especially once you figure out that you've been accepted. You now have to transition to specifically train for whatever branch fitness test that is. And they are all changing. The Army PFT used to be push-ups, sit-ups, and a two-mile run. Well, now they have an Army combat fitness test that's rolling out this year. They've been testing it for a couple of years now. But you're going to do deadlifts. You're going to do sled pulls. You're going to be carrying weight in a shuttle run. You're going to be doing, instead of sit-ups, you got leg tucks, which are basically knee-ups hanging from a pull-up bar, which are very tough to do. You got to take your knees to your elbows. But you still have to do a two-mile timed run. So they didn't take out the two-mile timed run. They just added a whole lot of stuff and a medicine ball throw too. But that's just one example of how the changes are occurring in the military. The Marine Corps has changed theirs as well. You can do pull-ups or push-ups. You just get less points if you select push-ups for your test once in the Marine Corps. However, to get into any of these branches via the officer selection program, you are going to take pretty much a completely different test than you would take when you're active duty student.
Right. And that one is obviously a more simple test that's involved with the push-ups, sit-ups, and then the run. The Marine Corps, I know, having worked with some Marine Corps option candidates, they, I think they're still doing the pull-ups and that longer run in their test. And actually, at the Marine Corps option, they're actually having the Marine Corps folks administer the test too. The reason I bring that up, Stu, is that, you know, each of the services, I think, put a little bit less or more weight on that test. What I find is the Marine Corps puts a huge amount of weight on that test, even though there's not a point total necessarily for the Marine Corps option. I don't think you can get a scholarship in the Marine Corps option without doing well on that test.
Can't do pull-ups, you will not pass that test and most likely not get into the Marine Corps.
Right. And then the Army is somewhere around 10% of the test is the 10% of the overall selection is the physical fitness test. And Air Force is a little bit less than 10%. And the Navy, they don't really have a point total, but I've heard it's probably somewhere around that range too. But again, you know, it's important, but probably most important for the Marine Corps selection based on what I have seen across all of the ROTC programs. So the Marine Corps really takes this test seriously.
Oh, absolutely. And here's where I've seen most people make mistakes is they look at the test and they say, oh yeah, I can do that. But they never even practice it. They don't even practice it once. And then they go take it for real with their recruiter and they do horrible on it. And if they do it enough times, that maybe they'll get a little bit better. But the way to do this, and I've seen this countless times, especially over our summer training program that we have here close to Annapolis, I get a lot of high school kids that are trying out for ROTC programs. And they work out with us 6-8 weeks, and we really focus on those events. We're running, we're doing calisthenics. That's it. And we may do some other strength exercises if we see a need for it for someone who maybe needs to put on some mass and grow with it. But I can't tell you how many times people have come in, actually worked out with us for about 6 to 8 weeks and received a college scholarship and joined the military. And then it doesn't take very long for their parents to come over and shake my hand and give me a big hug because they just saved a whole lot of money paying for college. And the one that comes up to mind that really hit me was somebody's parents came up to me, gave me big thanks. And, you know, their son was going to Carnegie Mellon, you know, to become an engineer and to be a Marine option. And they were just thrilled, you know, that he's going to be able to, you know, follow his dream. And all it really took was, and he was an athlete, but he was a big football player athlete. And typically those types don't do real well on these type of muscle endurance and endurance events. But it took him like 6-8 weeks of really focusing on it. And he crushed it and That is how you do it. You have to create some habits of getting used to these new elements of fitness, as specifically in, you know, cardiovascular endurance and muscle stamina.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, because I think, you know, some of the, certainly almost all, everybody who's listening to this podcast is going to be in uncertain time frame before they have to take this test. There could be somebody who's got a couple weeks. For you, you seem that maybe 8 weeks may be the sweet spot here. Or, you know, people may have a glide slope of, you know, 6 months to even longer. So I guess, depending upon the amount of time that they have, what's your advice? I mean, obviously, it sounds to me like maybe, you know, having at least 8 weeks sounds to me maybe to be the optimal, but, you know, we may be looking at a whole different group or time frame we're looking at for different people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, if it sneaks up on you, shame on you, right? Because if you're thinking about going to be in the military, you've probably been thinking about this for years. You know, and eventually when you start doing the paperwork to get into the military, if you haven't started training by then, you're behind the power curve. So, you know, long before you talk to a recruiter, you should be preparing yourself, because you never know. You know, that recruiter, you get through medical real fast, and next thing you know, in 2 weeks, you now have to take a fitness test. So you really need to backtrack everything far to the left of you talking to the recruiter and start training for that. I tell people all the time to don't even talk to a recruiter until you are ready to crush the fitness test. Because in some instances, you may even take it. I've seen people go in there on day one and take the fitness test. Some recruiters just want to see if you're serious about doing it. Before they even start the paperwork, they'll say, all right, let's take a fitness test, you know? And when you go in there and crush that thing, guess what happens? The recruiter says, all right, he's pretty serious about this. And so they're going to work a lot harder with you. You know, when you make a phone call to them, you know, they'll answer it, you know, they'll even call you, you know, if you're a really good candidate, they'll call you. But if you go in there and fail it on day one, good luck trying to get in touch with them the next day. Right, if you have questions. So it really puts your foot in the door if you can go in there and be real serious and show them that you're serious.
Yeah, you know, when you were talking, Stuart, I was thinking, like, for example, there's an early early ROTC boards in October of the person's senior year. You know, there's those early boards, but then, you know, most of the selection is actually done on later boards. They're usually after the first of the year, January, February. I mean, if you're not in, you know, the shape that you want to be, you know, you may want to look at maybe not competing on one of those early boards, and, you know, maybe taking that time between, say, August and, say, you know, the end of the year to improve your physical fitness, and then take that test later on in that year in order to kind of put your best foot forward.
That is a very good point, because it matters. You know, if you don't think the fitness matters, try this. Imagine the board that is being conducted. Everybody in there has good grades. Everybody has leadership experiences. Most everybody has some form of after school activity, whether it's athletics or it's band or something. You know, they're doing something constructive with their time. Everybody's top performers going into this challenge. And there are just a few things that can really set you apart from the other competition getting those scholarships. One of them is the fitness test. And the other ones are the other academic tests, you know, your ACT and your SATs. You know, as much as you prepare for those, you should be preparing equally for the fitness part of that test.
Yeah, Stu, you're right on target there. You know, I've sat on one of these boards, and that, frankly, the activities blur together. You take a look at, you know, one file after the other, and it's, you know, everybody's doing great things, and it's really hard to stand out. But you're absolutely right. If you max out that test or do really well on that test, that's just a great way to be able to separate yourself from the pack.
Yes, I think it's fantastic when people can do that. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I've done a few of the boards as well. And, you know, we look at those physical fitness scores, I tend to look at them first, but that's just kind of me. And then I backtrack from there. You know, not everybody does it that way, you know, but you know, if you have great PT scores and you have horrible academic scores, then there's an issue obviously with selection. But for the most part, they look at the whole person, and anything you can do to stand out is recommended. And all it takes is just, you know, a few to several weeks of training specifically for these tests, and you can stand out, definitely.
Now, if people aren't lucky enough to actually live in the Annapolis area and go to one of your 8-week fitness camps, and if you got to do this thing on their own, what might a program look like to kind of get somebody in better prepared to take to do well in one of these tests?
Sure. Well, you know, on my website, Stu Smith Fitness, I have an article section, and I have a ton of articles. Whether you are wanting to build your own workouts, if you are just having problems with the run, but your push-ups and sit-ups are fine, if you just want to focus on that, a lot of people do that as well, you know, kind of create their own running program. There's great ideas for that there, and I can talk about some of them. But, you know, I also have programs that are specifically designed for any fitness test out there. And believe it or not, you know, within the United States, I have written about over 35 different fitness tests, whether that is Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, different police programs have different tests, fire departments have different tests, special ops units within the military have different tests, SWAT teams have different tests. So if you put it all out there, there's about 35 different fitness tests out there, whether you're talking about, you know, military law enforcement, firefighters, local law enforcement, state law enforcement, federal law enforcement, everybody has a different fitness test. But when I put them all into this one big sheet of paper and look at them, there's about, I'd say there's probably about 10 exercises that are common to all of them. So, you know, when you're taking a fitness test, you have to really research what you're being tested on, practice that fitness test regularly. Now, not every day, but maybe once a week, and that counts as one of your workouts, because what that's going to do is that's going to help you build a strategy on where you pace yourself to get a good run. Because, you know, the last thing you want to do on a run, if it's a 2-mile run or say it's a 1-mile run, last thing you want to do is start off your first quarter mile of that run at a full sprint, because you'll just go downhill from there. So you need to practice that pace, and you need to muscle memory that pace. If you want a 6-minute mile, which is really competitive in these, or even break 6 minutes, it's even better. You're going to need to learn how to run a quarter mile in 90 seconds. And one lap around a track in 90 seconds, not that hard. Doing it 4 times becomes a little harder. So you start progressing over time with, you know, being able to, you know, stack on these 90 second quarters, you know, until you can get a 6-minute mile. Right? That's just one sample way of progressing through that. Where a lot of people go wrong, especially with running, is they don't run at all, and then they start running 15, 20 miles a week. And that typically brings in a lot of overuse injuries. You're going to feel it in your feet, your shins, your knees, tendons, joints, you know, other joints. Everything just starts hurting to a point where you can't run at all. So my advice is, if you're training for a mile to a 2-mile, 3-mile run, don't go run a 6 or 7 mile run slow, because that's not really helping you, right? You need to focus on a good goal pace run so you can repeat that pace for whatever distance you're being tested in. And then as far as the other events of the test, they're just upper body exercises. I would suggest doing upper body one day, lower body the next, even though you don't get tested on squats and lunges and things like that. They're great to helping build some strength and some muscle stamina for the runs, because there's two things that's going to give out whenever you're running. That's either your lungs or your legs. So let's work some legs by doing some calisthenics. I usually call it run and leg PT day, where we'll run a quarter mile at your goal pace, and then you do a set of squats and a set of lunges. Repeat that 6-8 times, even, you know, as you get better, you know, resting minimally. You know, so that'd be a leg day. But on the days in between that, you just work on the events that you're getting tested in. If you're having a hard time with push-ups, you know, do as many push-ups as you can, and then resort to knee push-ups, or maybe get some dumbbells and do some dumbbell bench press. So you're still working those muscles. When you can't do any more push-ups, you can still work those muscles thoroughly, you know, in a workout. And then sit-ups really is a pacing exercise. People don't really realize about sit-ups being a pacing drill. If you have a 2-minute test for sit-ups, you really need to pace yourself, because where a lot of people go wrong is in the first 30 seconds, like that quarter mile sprint for the runner. They just push it really hard for the first 30 seconds, may get 30, 35 sit-ups in 30 seconds. I mean, faster than 1 per second, but then they don't even match that first 35 rep pace in the next minute and a half, and they get 50, you know, total. So you just burned yourself out. However, if you just slow yourself down in the first 30 seconds, and let's say you get 20 in the first 30 seconds, and then maintain that pace, and then you get 40 in 1 minute, you get 60 in a minute and a half, and you get 80 in 2 minutes, that's a good above average score. And then if you can fine tune that a little bit more and do 25 every 30 seconds, you got yourself 100. Those are great PT scores to be competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and doing them, like you mentioned, just actually doing the test itself is, you know, obviously very, very important overall, just to, you know, understand what you're saying with that pace. Absolutely. So I wanted to ask, what you mentioned about the rest. So a lot of our listeners are going to try to do this on their own. So what's the importance of rest in between that? Because I know you alluded to, you know, one day doing lower body abs, the other day, you know, upper body. Obviously there's important not to burn yourself out and to give yourself the proper recovery.
Yes. You know what, where most people screw up, and the great thing about being a teenager is that your body recovers really fast. However, if you're starting to increase in volume of whether that's running or calisthenics, you kind of need that extra day in between as a recovery day for that muscle group. So if you're doing upper body one day and lower body the next day, there's no reason why you can't do upper body again on Wednesday. Where people screw up is they just do push-ups and crunches every single day, 5-6 days a week. And that you can do okay with that for about a week to 10 days and see some decent progress. But typically, few weeks after that, it's just going to go in the other direction because you're really not recovering, especially as your volume gets higher. You know, if you're picking up some volume of getting 100, 200, even more push-ups and crunches in a workout, you know, spread out through multiple sets, that kind of volume requires that extra day of rest. You know, a good split routine for someone preparing for a PFT would be upper body one day, lower body the next. You do a little bit of running, you know, afterwards, just to kind of get used to the process of push, pull, and run, or push sit-ups and run. Leg days, mix in the running with the legs just to kind of understand how running with heavy legs feels like. And then on day three, that can be kind of focus on your weakness, whatever that is. If it's just running, let's do some different types of runs. Maybe do some faster paced runs and work on some lungs. If your kind of legs are kind of soft, that's also a good day to just do some non-impact cardio. So maybe take a day off of running and just do biking or elliptical or swimming, just to work your lungs without the impact of running. The problem is it really kind of depends on the person. If that person's also trying to lose weight, you know, running a little heavier comes with, at a price. You know, your knees hurt, your back hurts, your bones hurt. I mean, everything just kind of hurts if you're running really heavy. So like I said, this process really needs to kind of build on itself for weeks and months prior to taking this test versus, hey, I just signed on the dotted line and I got to take a test in 3 weeks. Let me get started. But, you know, it also depends. You know, if you're a three sport athlete in high school and, you know, you do soccer, you know, where you're running all the time, or you're cross country, you know, just adding some push-ups and sit-ups for, you know, a few months prior to that, and you're going to do fine with that kind of running base. If you're a bigger guy and you're really strong, that can be an issue because you may not have the muscle stamina to really score well on those calisthenics tests, though you're strong as an ox, and you're probably bigger and running for a longer distance than 100 yards fast is rather challenging too. So I've seen that kind of take some time. But once they kind of get into that tactical athlete mode where they're able to run and able to do more calisthenics, they still have that hidden strength that they've, you know, had for years of their athletic history that also helps them, especially if they're going Army or Marine Corps and now they're preparing for the events like rucking and, you know, other load bearing activities. So like I said, phase one gets you to the training, but that alone won't get you through the training. Cause when, once you get there and you're going through any type of indoctrination training, whether you call it boot camp or plebe summer or whatever, you're going to be doing events that are very militarized events, such as load bearing and running longer distances, obstacle courses, you know, those type of things. And, you know, that's a different phase to prepare for, you know, and that's a good thing. Once you get in, you typically have some time before you ship out, you know, so you really need to take advantage of those 3 to 4 months before you go to plebe summer or, you know, summer training by getting specifically prepared for what you are about to endure.
No, great, great stuff, Stu. You know, how about differences between men and women?
You know, I mean, the tests are a little bit different. Sometimes the scoring percentages are a little bit different. But, you know, I put it this way. I've been more impressed by women than I have by men for years. they are so squared away. They have something to prove. And like I said, I've just been very impressed by the candidates that are women that want to serve in the military, and they just get after it. You know, we have a couple that train with us pretty regularly, you know, that they started with us in high school and now they're in college. We got a Marine option. We have a Naval Academy cadet that, you know, they're both or midshipmen, and got a couple of West Point cadets. And they are really strong, have great endurance, can meet the male standards on most events, and they're capable. And I think it's a really good thing to see, because the young men that are also in the program, they see that and they're very responsive to, like, man, yeah, I'd serve with her anytime, you know, and that's a really good thing to see. Now, it doesn't, I don't want to sound sexist when I say this, but, you know, the above average woman can definitely outperform the average man. But, you know, if you're average to below average on your physical fitness, whether you're a man or woman, you're not really setting yourself up for success at all in any of this, especially a competitive program. So, you know, I try to push everybody into that above average advanced level fitness, just because here's the reason. And this is for male and females. One day your fitness is going to be a determining factor of you surviving, your buddy surviving, or someone you are trying to help in this job survive. So it is that important. And, you know, every now and then I get someone who says, you know, I really want to serve, but I just can't get motivated to go train. You know, maybe they're training on their own. That's hard to do. But if that doesn't motivate you to go train, that, you know, training like your buddy's life depends on it, you might want to consider a different profession, because that is really what it comes down to. Like, you are training to be physically fit in the event you need to use it to save another. So that's my pitch on everybody joining the military, whether you're a man or a woman.
Yep, you've got to do it for the right reasons. Absolutely. So is there any, just one more question about women. Is there anything that you do? I know that women sometimes have susceptibility to injury, specific injuries that men may not have. Like, I know ACL sometimes can be an issue, but I just, is there any concern there regarding any training specifically for women that you might give any advice to?
Not really. I tend to put them in height and weight categories. Whether you're a man or a woman, here's a height and weight. If you're a 5'6", 130-pound male or female, you're going to have some of the very same weaknesses and some strengths too. You know, at that weight, you can probably throw your body weight around better than most people. However, some of the load-bearing activities will be very challenging. So I tend to focus on, like I said, height and weights categories versus male or female categories. And I found that those are where the injuries occur in a height weight category. So I, someone who's trying to do load bearing activities, but's rather thin will tend to have hip and lower back pains. Someone who's rather heavy and trying to run will typically have all the overuse injuries that come with running and being heavy. However, they can pick up a ruck and go for days, you know, at a slower pace, you know, so everybody has this unique strength and weakness that is really part of the individual's athletic history and really body composition, you know, to be honest. And, like I said, male or female, I have seen the study on hips being different and ACL issues, you know, and that causing an ACL issue. But, you know, for most people that are teenagers that are having ACL issues, it's probably even more of a factor that they're running on these turf fields now. Because whether male or female, there are a lot more ACL pains that are coming, you know, through the system, you know, running on turf, and it grabs so much that if you're changing direction, sometimes your knee goes one way and you go the other way and you've blown out a knee. So no, I tend not to look at it on a male female side. I tend to look at it on a height and weight and the athletic history that comes with that. So like I said, everybody's kind of individualized with those two things: your athletic history, your height and weight, and then from there, or body composition. And from there, I tend to find those weaknesses that everybody has, depending on those two categories. And we try to work on those weaknesses, especially to get through the training. To get to the training, it's not a whole lot to it. I mean, it's push-ups, sit-ups, and a run, you know, maybe pull-ups, depending on what group you're in. You know, that has a system in itself that's not that complicated. But getting through the training, when you're looking at all the elements of fitness, when you're talking about the tactical athlete, you need to be strong and powerful. You need to have muscle stamina and endurance. You need to have flexibility and mobility. You need to have speed and agility. You also need to have grip. You know, all of those elements of fitness come in to create the tactical athlete. And the tactical athlete has to be good at all of them. Doesn't have to be great at any of them. And your athletic history may make you great in one of them, but you know, if you're a track star, running is going to be your easy thing, but maybe upper body strength is going to be challenging to you. You know, we all have these little yin and yangs of the elements of fitness that are either strengths or weaknesses, and it's our job to flatten out that weakness and bring it up to closer to a strength level.
Right. So if they start a program, say, similar to the ones that you design, about how long does it usually take for them to start seeing some results from, you know, improvements and things, you know, when they start these programs?
I try to make my programs anywhere from 6 to 8, even 12 weeks long. I have a couple that are even 24 weeks long, but that's kind of like a to and through mixed together. But you know, to get to the training, you can see some really big results within 3 to 4 weeks. But it's, you know, as with anything, it needs to become a habit. It needs to be persistence, needs to take a play in this. And you just need to be diligent about actually getting things done, you know, on whatever you're supposed to do that day, just get it done. And if it's too easy, make it a little harder. Add another set to it. Add another mile to it. If it's too hard, take a mile away out of it. Take a set away from it. You know, there's no program that's going to be personalized for you and your abilities. So you have to be smart about not overdoing it. If you're at zero on running and one of my programs takes you to, let's say, 10 miles a week, your first week, that may be a little too much for you. You may have to cut it down to like 5 miles a week if you've done no running in the last year, something like that. So, you know, there's some common sense that takes place to it, but where a lot of teenagers go wrong is they just do way too much, way too fast, and expect results immediately. And it, just be patient. It takes about a month and you start seeing results. Give it 2 months and you'll see huge results. Give it even a year, you'll be a whole different person.
That's awesome. So how do you stay motivated? I mean, I know that if they were with you in there in Annapolis, they'd be motivated to come on out. But if you got somebody sitting there in Oklahoma someplace, and I know the motivation of being in the service should be enough, but I mean, how do you keep that motivation up? And I do know that you do have some services where you work with clients one-on-one remotely, but how do you kind of keep that motivation going for an individual, you know, so they don't get discouraged and they can keep it up?
You know, that's a really good question. I find that, you know, having some form of accountability is very helpful if you're on your own, right? So maybe it's your parents or a mentor, and you say, here's my program I'm going to do. What do you think? Do you mind if I check in with you every day or every other day or every week just to let you know what I've done? Just as a way to, like, I got to go work out. I got to tell them I worked out. I don't want to go tell them that I didn't work out for 3 days in a row. You know what I mean? So it's part of that accountability is very important. Something I used to do, because I used to work out before school when I was in high school, and then I'd work out after school or do a sport or something. And I used to make, and this kind of dates me a little bit, but remember the old tape recorders where you could just put play and you push play and record, and you could record onto a cassette tape, right? But now I'm sure you could do it with your iPhone, but I would just record something to myself right next to my alarm clock that woke me up an hour early. And I would say, hey, Stu, get your sorry self up out of bed and go work out. And that's all it was. And I would play that right after I hit snooze once. I would play that and I'd be like, all right, okay. So it was just the little mind game that I would do to, like, say, try to get me back into that state of where I was motivated. I was motivated enough to make this recording, right? But when you're in bed and you have an option to sleep an extra hour, and you're probably most comfortable that you have ever been in your life, that last hour before you have to wake up, it's hard to get out of bed. So you gotta think of creative ways to help you do that. And that was mine. Yeah, you know, I used to do that. I probably done that 500 times, you know, last 2 years of high school, just hitting that button and listening to myself yell at myself. So,
well, I do know you do some remote where you actually get on the phone with some of these candidates, right? Even though they may not be in the Maryland area, and that you're the tape recorder, you're the guy that they talk to, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm the accountability guy. I do have a couple of programs where I send weekly workouts to them, and they are personalized. Those unfortunately aren't free. They just take time and quite a bit of effort to make them personalized for people. But if you need help like that, I do have program online coaching that allows for that. And basically what works like this is I make a week's worth of workouts designed for your abilities, the facilities that you have available to you, your time per day, days per week, your goals, you know, all of that, your current fitness level, and create a weekly program. And then at the end of that week, or even in the middle of the week or during the week, if you have questions, contact me. At the end of the week, we need to discuss how it went and what next week looks like, because your feedback at the end of week one will help me create a better week two. And we just kind of go through that 1 week at a time. And it's fun. I've been doing that for almost 20 years now, online coaching. Believe it or not, most people that I have online coaching are older people that are just trying to lose weight. But I do get a few young guys that and women that are preparing for anything in the tactical realm, military, law enforcement, firefighters, service academies, ROTC programs, and special ops programs. So I get a little bit of everybody in there. But I would say a majority of them are just 50 over and need to lose weight.
Yeah, so. No, that sounds great. Okay, so they do a fitness program. They do well on a physical fitness test, and they've accomplished that goal. Now, what normally happens with these ROTC candidates is they've taken this test in, say, October, November of their senior year, and they've got from about, you know, January till, say, the fall. So they've got another 8 months before they go to, you know, their first ROTC fitness test. And normally, you know, for every single ROTC program, you've got to pass the Army or Air Force or Navy physical fitness test in order to be able to contract and actually get that scholarship money. So we're talking about your fitness quest does not end when you take this test. You've got to continue to prepare and continue to get better. And so is there anything different that a candidate might do once they pass this initial, what you would call phase one, to get them from phase one to when they start, when they actually start their training program?
Yes. You know what? I had this conversation yesterday with a young man that just found out he's going to West Point, and he has, you know, a good amount of time now between now and when he ships in July. And I told him this. I said, look, I spent most of my high school life knowing that I was going to serve. And, you know, so I spent all of my whole life was built around getting to the training, right? And I never once, after I finished, I never once considered, how am I going to get through the training? And I remember, you know, showing up for plebe summer, even though I was a three-sport athlete in high school, and I remember showing up plebe summer working out, and I was not ready for that style of fitness. And I should have been. You know, I had plenty of time to do it, but I was thinking, I'm in, right? And I'm already in good shape. You know, why worry about it? You know, but that was my mindset at 18 years old. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on in your head, you know, once you realize you're leaving your hometown and your house, that, you know, sometimes it's real easy to not think about, you know, now I got to get ready to get through the training, you know, when you're in the middle of saying bye to people and, you know, preparing to leave home for the first time. That's a stressful process. But it does help you tremendously by learning a little bit about the specifics of what you are about to endure, whether that is a new fitness test altogether, like the Army has now, whether that is maybe you want to do a Ranger contract, you know, when you go to the Army, or maybe go to Airborne one summer training. You know, those are little things that, you know, through the course of your journey, you can start preparing for, not only to get to that training, but also to get through the training. And as long as you can think that way, and you got to think in two phases, just because if you stop at phase one and you just continue doing phase one, it will get you, you know, somewhat in there, but it's hard to be competitive, especially if they change the test on you. to contract. And it's really important that freshman year to get that contract, because you can, you know, be a part of a ROTC program and serve the military right afterwards as an officer. And that's an impressive feat, but you got to get to the training and then you got to get through the training. And I would focus on that. That is my advice to anybody who just found out they got selected, is to now, you spend all this time getting to it, congratulations, now let's focus on getting through it and what that means.
Yeah. I guess, Stu, the fitness journey never ends, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And it shouldn't.
Yep.
You know, I'm 51 years old now, and my journey has not ended either. You know, I am still doing things and training hard just because, you know, it is a journey. It is not a destination.
Yeah. Well, great, Stu. So what I want to do is I just want to ask you, what is the most important takeaway from our talk here today? What's the one message you want to send out to people listening here today?
Let me just rehash the importance of what tactical fitness really is. And remember, it's, you have to prepare to get to the training first. Otherwise, you will never wear a uniform, never get the opportunity to go to a boot camp or a academy or, you know, an indoctrination program at a ROTC unit. So that is serious. You got to really take that seriously if you want to get selected. You'll never get through the program if you don't thoroughly understand what is next whenever you get selected, because things will change. Tests will change. Tests may get harder. They may get easier for you because, you know, now you're a football player and you're going to be tested in deadlift in the Army Combat Fitness Test. You're going to love that. But you still got to run 2 miles, you know, for that test. So yeah, things may get easier. They may get harder. They're just going to get different, and you just need to prepare for that. And then finally, once you are an active duty member, you know, don't forget that you're still going to take these fitness tests every 6 months. So that is part of it. But then, you know, depending on your job, there will be, you know, exercises that you need to do regularly to maintain your proficiency, whether that is a job skill itself that is rather physical, or it is a test that you're taking to get to another, you know, type of training to progress throughout your, you know, officer career. And then also realize that, you know, there's a stress mitigation component to the active duty job, as well as the student job. I mean, being a college student is stressful, and you need to find ways to unwind and relax that are healthy for you, that allow you to recover from very physical events, very stressful mental events, in order just to stay healthy and, you know, not snap and lose it. So, you know, that stress mitigation is very important along your journey, no matter where you are in the journey as well.
Stu, that was great. StuSmithFitness.com. Stu, it was great to have you on the podcast here today. Thanks for giving your wisdom to our listeners. And I'm sure they're going to use that in order to do the best that they can on these fitness tests. And of course, take the long-term view as you do, and realize that fitness is a lifelong journey, and one that provides benefits beyond getting into a service academy or ROTC program, but one that benefits you your entire life.
Well, thank you very much. I'd love to have you on my podcast as well. I have a podcast called The Tactical Fitness Report, and I will ask you the questions next time, and you can join me on mine.
Well, I'd love to do that, Stu. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the ROTC Scholarship Podcast. If you like what we're doing, please leave a quick review. If you have any questions or want more information about ROTC or our consulting services, please visit our website at rotcconsulting.com. Take care, and we'll see you next time.